Welcome to In Tune with the Opera Company of Philadelphia,
the place to learn everything you need to know about upcoming opera company productions.
Hi, I'm Mike Bolton. I'm the Director of Community Programs for the Opera Company.
And I'm Marin Montalbano.
We've had so many interesting new operas with the Opera Company Philadelphia. Last year, we did Tan Dun's Ti, a Mirror of Soul. I guess a year or two before that was David de Chiara and Bernard Uzan's Cyrano. And then in 2006 was Richard Daniel Poor and Toni Morrison's Margaret Garner.
Right. And continuing that tradition, we're going to be doing the U.S. premiere of Hans Werner Henze's Phaedra. And that's a part of the Opera at the Perlman series?
Absolutely. And I think Opera at the Perlman really highlights innovative repertoire and great cutting-edge productions as well.
Yeah. Well, this is a really, really important premiere, and it's definitely going to be drawing a lot of national attention. But we also have a bonus because we have this great cast of really established stars like William Burton and Tamara Mumford.
Absolutely. And then I think of unique interest for this contemporary opera is that we'll have a countertenor in Anthony Roth Costanzo.
Plus, we're going to have upcoming singers from the Curtis Institute and the Academy of Vocal Arts.
No, Henze has been called the grandpa of contemporary opera by the online blogger Opera Chic. Henze has written operas that are based on familiar subject matter. Manon Lescaut, he also wrote his very own Orpheus opera. Of course, we saw another Orpheus opera last year at the Perlman with the Gluck's piece. He wrote a piece on Fidel Castro and so much more. He's just an interesting guy.
Yeah, well, and then there's also a fascinating history surrounding Phaedra. You know, when he was writing Phaedra, he fell into a coma halfway through composing the opera. He thought he might not survive to complete it. And then he fought back, survived, and then even wrote another opera after Phaedra. It's amazing.
But on this edition of In Tune with the Opera Company of Philadelphia,
we'll talk to the Opera Company's General Director, David Devan, about the importance of bringing works like Phaedra to Philadelphia.
And then I'll speak to composer, conductor, and musicologist Dr. Jeremy Gill about Hans Werner Henze and what to listen for within this score.
And we'll also have a biography of Henze and a complete plot synopsis. Also, we'll talk to OCP's principal stage manager, Carrie Masick, about what it's like to be the one in control of every performance. All of this coming up. Stay tuned as we'll be right back after this message.
The United States premiere of Hans Werner Henze's opera, Phaedra, brings the curtain down on the 2010-2011 Opera Company of Philadelphia season. This arresting opera is based on the classic Greek myth of Phaedra. Phaedra's forbidden and unrequited love for her stepson results in Hippolyte's demise at his father's hand and Phaedra's death at her own. The New York Times praised its 2007 world premiere for a consistent rhythmic vitality and often an otherworldly beauty that is hard to resist. A new production for the American premiere is conceived by artistic director Robert B. Driver with designer Philippe Armand. Corrado Rovarez conducts. Order your tickets today for Phaedra in the intimate Perlman Theater of the Kimmel Center for the Performing Arts, www.operaphila.org. or by calling 215-732-8400.
You're listening to In Tune with the Opera Company of Philadelphia. I'm Marin Montalbano. The Opera at the Perlman series allows a company to showcase either chamber-sized operas or cutting-edge contemporary operas that are meant to be produced in a more intimate setting.
And I think that's one of the great things about experiencing opera at the Perlman Theater. It only has 600 seats or so, but there's no bad seats in the house. And the audience ends up really being almost part of the show. Marin, you were involved in our Orfeu production last year. And as a performer, how is that different performing in the Perlman versus performing in the Academy?
Well, for one thing, you don't have to sing as loud. That's definitely a big thing. You know, your pianos can really be very piano and everybody can hear it. The other thing that I thought was very interesting was that I could see almost everybody in the house, which is a different experience. When you're on the stage at the Academy, you might be able to see like the first couple of rows. But here, when you're on the stage at the Perlman, you're just, you can see everybody's face.
Especially because the light from the theater, the light on stage just kind of reflects back into the house.
Definitely
and illuminates
does.
The whole house.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah. So those who saw and loved our amazing production of Orfeu et Eurydice at the Perlman will be excited to learn that the same production team, OCP's artistic director Robert B. Driver and set designer Philippe Armand and costume designer Richard St. Clair, will be back together again to create magic for this production.
You know, I talked to David Devan about the importance of the Opera at the Perlman series to the company, And here's what he had to say.
We always think of the opera company as kind of being like a gallery of opera experiences, just like an art gallery is a curator of visual art. And if you think about us as a gallery, we need to provide lots of different views into the different aspects of opera. So you'd have a contemporary wing and a Renaissance wing, etc. The Perlman Productions provide a real opportunity for us to experience a different aesthetic than you would ordinarily find in a 2,700-seat opera house. And the scale really permits that and is a real opportunity to explore contemporary theater at its height and is a great counterpoint to many of the other repertoire selections that we have in the season. This also gives our audience an opportunity to experience something that's very visceral and very now because it will be guided by a creative team that is all of those things.
That was the Opera Company of Philadelphia's General Director, David Devan, talking about the importance of works like Phaedra in Philadelphia.
Coming up, we'll talk to Dr. Jeremy Gill about Phaedra. But have you ever wondered what the stage manager does? He or she is sort of the master control of any opera performance. Nothing happens. No curtain goes up, no lighting changes, no music starts without their cue. We sat down with OCP's amazing principal stage manager, Carrie Masick, to talk about what she does.
Hello, I'm Carrie Masick. I'm the stage manager for the Opera Company of Philadelphia. And basically, the stage manager is the central nervous system of any opera production. We are just at the center of all information that is coming and going from all the different departments involved in putting on an opera. So we work with the music staff, with the artists, with the costume department, the scenic department, the properties department. And we're responsible for gathering information from all those departments and then distributing it out to all of the other people who may need to know information. We're also responsible for being in all of the rehearsals with the singers, and that's how we learn the show so that then we can help move the show to the stage and teach it to the crew and to all the other people that need to know it and actually execute the show in performances on stage. During a performance, I am sitting at a console offstage on stage right, and at my console I have a whole bunch of different things to aid me in seeing the show and in running the show. I have TV monitors that show the stage from a camera in the front of house, and that show the maestro conducting down in the pit. I have a monitor that shows me what is running on the console controlling all the lighting instruments, so I know what lighting cues are up right now and what's coming up. And my job is to communicate via headset to the technicians all around the building and give them all of the cues that happen. So every time you see lights changing on the stage or you see a piece of scenery moving or anything like that, that's because I'm giving them a go. I'm giving them a cue to make those movements happen. The deck is what we call the stage area. And a lot of our stage terminology comes originally from sailing and from ships. So the term deck comes from the deck of a ship. Everything that flies in and out is called the rigging, which also would have come from the rigging on a ship to raise and lower the sails and things like that. Historically, a lot of the first theater technicians actually did come from the sailing and shipping industry. So that's how we get some of our terminology. I'm also assisted always by two assistant stage managers, and they're responsible for running the deck backstage. As an assistant stage manager, it's their job to make sure that all of the crew personnel are in place in time for any technical moves that they have to execute. It's their job to make sure that all of the performing artists are in place and plenty of time to make their entrances. The ASMs or assistant stage managers have to check that the artists are wearing the right costume pieces, that they're carrying the right props in their hands if someone's supposed to enter with a book or a bag or anything like that. And then in opera, the assistant stage managers give the cues for everyone to enter to the stage. So nobody comes on stage in an opera production without getting an actual cue from the assistant stage manager. And in order to execute all those things, both I and my assistants read music fluently, and pretty much everything is called off of a musical moment in the score in opera. No matter what happens to you during a live performance, you have to keep that performance going and make it the best possible performance experience for the audience. So if a technical move doesn't happen as it is supposed to happen, on your feet, you have to decide how to adjust that. So if, for example, last night in a performance, we had an element that was flying in from the rail. It was a scenic drop that was flying in. It got caught up on something else coming in. But our job is just to fix that as quickly as possible, to get it unstuck and to bring it in so that the audience sees the proper stage picture. There are a lot of things constantly happening. You work long hours. You're responsible for a lot of information. And as a stage manager, you're also responsible for everyone's safety backstage, for making sure that with all of these moving elements and things that are happening, that everyone is in a safe situation. Also, I just really enjoy the excitement of live entertainment. And there's, you know, something that I love about coming to work every day.
That was the opera company's principal stage manager, Carrie Masick.
Hans Werner Henze is a mainstay of opera throughout all Europe, but his operas only appear every once in a while on U.S. stages. Now, he's one of the most colorful characters in opera, so Mike Bolton is going to tell us a little bit about the German composer.
Hans Werner Henze was born in Gütersloh, Germany, on July 1, 1926. He was interested in music from an early age and began composing at the age of 12 before he had had any formal training. Although his father was a proficient amateur musician, Hans's musical interest caused great conflict between the father and son. That Hans was homosexual made matters worse, and his father emphatically rejected his son, leaving traumatic emotional scars that would continue to haunt Henze long after his father's death. A veteran and strong supporter of the Nazi Party, Henze's father forced all of his 6 children, including Hans, to join the Hitler Youth. While he was a high school student in Bielefeld, Henze won a stipend to attend the Brunswick State Music School and was able to convince his parents to allow him to go. He studied piano, percussion, and music theory and attended many concerts and dramas. In 1943, Henze's father volunteered for re-entry into the army. He was sent to the Eastern Front and became a casualty of war. Soon after, Henze was conscripted into the German army in 1944, but continued to compose covertly, especially after being captured by the British. He was held as a prisoner of war until the end of the war and used the time to improve his English and find out about life outside of Nazi Germany. When Henze returned to civilian life, he resumed his musical studies at the Evangelische Kirchenmusikalische Institut in Heidelberg, where he learned harmony and counterpoint with Wolfgang Fortner. In 1947, he began to study at the Darmstadt Summer Schools for New Music, where he met René Leibowitz and embraced his 12-tone technique. During this time, Henze integrated a variety of musical styles and produced his earliest acknowledged works, including the Kammerkonzert for piano, flute and strings, violin concerto, and symphony. Henze produced his first opera, the one-act Das Wundertheater, in 1949, and followed it with his first ballet the same year. His first full-scale opera, Boulevard Solitude, an updated version of the story of Manon Lescaut, premiered in Hanover in 1952 and received considerable success. The Opera Company Philadelphia will produce Puccini's version of Manon Lescaut next season in April 2012. In the following years, Henze produced a great deal of work to critical acclaim, including 6 ballets and 2 radio operas. But in 1953, Henze left Germany, reacting both to his contemporaries' close-minded reception of his works and hostility towards his homosexuality and leftist politics. In the spring of that year, he moved to Italy, to the Fiore di Schia in the Bay of Naples. Over the next decade, Henze's productivity was dominated by operatic works, with occasional smaller vocal, instrumental, and orchestral works. Eventually, he met Ingeborg Bachmann, who would prove to be his favorite librettist and collaborator, and would work with him on the operas Der Prinz von Homburg in 1960, Elegy for Young Lovers in 61, and Der Junge Lord in 1965. The Opera Company of Philadelphia presents Elegy for Young Lovers in collaboration with the Curtis Institute of Music and Kimmel Center Presents as part of the Aurora Series for Chamber Opera at the Perelman Theater in March 2012. In 1961, Henze left Naples, moved near Rome, and began to teach at the Salzburg Mozarteum a short time later. Beginning to taste international acclaim, in 1963, Henze flew to New York City for the premiere of his 5th symphony under Leonard Bernstein. Henze returned to the operatic stage in 1976 with We Come to the River, the comic The English Cat, and the ballet Orpheus. With these pieces, Henze moved to a more reflective period in his life and music, and subsequently has mostly avoided controversy in his later years. In 1990, Henze produced two operas that focused on personal and psychological experience, Das Verratene Meer and Venus und Adonis. Henze began work on Phaedra, based on the tragedy of Phaedra and her stepson, Hippolyte. While only halfway finished the work, he was struck by a mysterious illness in London. He was rushed back to Italy, unable to move, and in a coma-like state, seemingly inching towards death. He was visited by many friends and well-wishers saying goodbye when he suddenly recovered after 2 months. Feeling as if he had been struck by a revelation while ill, he wrote the second half of his opera, which expands on the original myth, incorporating themes of resurrection, with Hippolyte coming back from the dead. Shortly after his recovery, Henze's partner of more than 40 years died after battling cancer. Surrounded by both hope and loss, Phaedra premiered at the Staatsoper Berlin in 2007, with later performances in Brussels, Frankfurt, Vienna, and Cologne. Most recently, he completed Opfergang Immolazione. It premiered in January 2010 in Rome, near the home where he has continued to live for more than 40 years.
Hi, this is Marin Montalbano, and you're listening to In Tune with the Opera Company of Philadelphia. Before we delve into the opera's plot, let's talk to Dr. Jeremy Gill about what to listen for in Hans Werner Henze's Phaedra.
I think one of the things that distinguishes Henze from a lot of his European contemporaries is that he didn't pick one style and stick with it. While Henze dabbled in serialism, he did do some 12-tone writing, he also played around with Stravinsky and neoclassicism. He's done work with electronic music. He is a multifaceted composer stylistically. And that's interesting about him, but it's also particularly interesting about the opera Phaedra. He reveals that eclecticism in this opera. Henze's fascination with color in particular is announced from the outset of the piece. It starts with an E flat, but not a chord, just the note. So a pitch E flat, and immediately starts to get colored by the addition and subtraction of various instruments, and then slowly the addition of other pitches. And this note actually does have an external reference. Henze is referencing some of the masterworks of the operatic repertoire throughout the piece, and this one, I think, is referencing Das Rheingold, which begins famously with this extended E-flat major triad. So we have that reference there. But there are other specifically orchestrational references in Phaedra as well. So, for instance, there are a number of times where solo instruments will come out of the orchestral texture, and you'll literally be hearing just a saxophone and the voice, or just a cello at one point and the voice. And most interestingly, this happens with the piano. So there are a number of times where it's just piano and voice. And when the orchestra texture thins out and you have just piano and voice, it's a little odd, but it calls to my mind immediately another Greek opera, which is Ariadne auf Naxos, right, and the famous soprano aria, the Großmächtige Prinzessin, which has a big, long piano and coloratura bit at the beginning of it. A very common role is the pants role to past operatic traditions, which let's take a famous example would be Carabino from Le Nozze di Figaro. So Carabino is a young boy, but is played by a woman. So a woman will put on a male outfit and play the role of this young. Henze actually one-ups that whole thing by creating in Artemis the inversion of a pants role to begin with. So instead of having a woman playing a young man, what we have is a man who's a countertenor playing a woman, who, by the way, is a goddess. So we have that added level. So that's already the inversion, man playing woman as opposed to woman playing man. But then it, at a crucial point toward the end of the first act, when Hippolytus is killed, Artemis actually slips down into the male register, and Henze actually changes in the score. She's now written in bass clef. So it's a real change of register, shifting down into the male voice. And so now we have a male voice singing the part of a female goddess. And he was all along a male, but we knew him as a countertenor. And by this time, we've sort of accepted that this countertenor is a woman. And so by slipping into the male range, Henze is throwing yet another twist into this whole pants roll mess.
Henze has set Greek myths in the past, including his own setting of the Orpheus myth. While the opera Phaedra has its basis in Greek mythology, it takes off from the traditional storyline in Act Two. Here's Mike Bolton to give us a complete rundown of the opera's plot.
The Opera Company of Philadelphia has been bringing its audiences on a journey, an exploration of contemporary opera over the past several years, beginning with the 2006 East Coast premiere of Richard Daniel Poor and Toni Morrison's Margaret Garner. Since that time, OCP has produced several new works such as David de Chiara and Bernard Uzan's Cyrano, to fascinating contemporary pieces like Tan Dunn's Tea, A Mirror of Soul, Britten's The Rape of Lucretia, Alban Berg's Wolzeck, Osvaldo Golijov's Ina de Mar, and Samuel Barber's Antony and Cleopatra. This initiative will continue next season with the local premiere of Nico Muhly's Dark Sisters. With Phaedra, the company turns to a piece premiered in 2007 by the most important German operatic composer of the past 50 years, Hans Werner Henze. It's a brief chamber opera in two acts, only five cast members, with fewer than 25 musicians in the orchestra pit. It's no longer than 80 minutes, and there's no intermission. And turning to the classic story of Phaedra, the woman who, under the influence of Aphrodite, falls in love with her stepson Hippolyte, Henze explores one of the most fascinating mythological stories from ancient Greece. Her story has inspired plays by Euripides, Seneca, Racine, and Eugene O'Neill, music by Rameau, Pizzetti, Millau, and Britten, and countless pieces of art. In order to understand the context of the opera, let's look at the background behind these characters. Some of their actions would fit perfectly at home in a reality show and even put some of the antics of those contestants to shame. Let's start with Phaedra's mother, Queen Pasiphae of Crete. Poseidon cursed the queen and forced her to have lustful feelings for a white bull. Her intimate relations with the bull produced the half-man, half-bull beast, the Minotaur. Her daughter Phaedra was married to Theseus, king of Athens and son of the sea god Poseidon. Theseus is one of those characters in opera that we hear about but never actually hear from, like Kaikobad in Strauss's Die Frau ohne Schatten or Agamemnon in the same composer's Elektra. Theseus's influence and presence permeate the entire opera, and we never hear a peep out of him. Before he married Phaedra, he had a son, Hippolyte, with an Amazonian princess. Hippolyte was very different from most other men. He worshipped the goddess Artemis, goddess of the hunt, wild animals, wilderness, childbirth, the moon, and virginity. In return, Artemis protects Hippolyte. Hippolyte vowed to remain chaste his entire life. Well known for his hunting skills, he preferred to live in the forest and drink water from the river through his naked hands rather than living in the corruption of the city where he had to drink from a cup. After the birth of Hippolyte, Theseus was betrothed to Phaedra's sister Ariadne. Ariadne was crucial in helping Theseus perform one of his most famous acts of courage, killing the Minotaur, the beastly half-man, half-bull, half-brother of both Ariadne and Phaedra. While Theseus had sworn to marry Ariadne, he abandoned her on the Isle of Naxos, and she eventually found love in the arms of the god Dionysus. This brings us back to Ariadne's sister, Phaedra. Well, through the machinations of Aphrodite, goddess of love, beauty, and sexuality, she fell madly in love with her stepson, Hippolyte. Phaedra wrote to Hippolyte confessing her feelings, saying that he shouldn't worry about the incest issue, as even the gods and goddesses had incestuous affairs. Hippolyte was disgusted by his stepmother's amorous intentions and violently rejected her, calling her worse than her monster-bearing mother. This insult caused Phaedra to become racked with guilt and believe that her mother's disgraceful lust for the bull had been passed down to her. Humiliated and ashamed, Phaedra killed herself, leaving a note saying that Hippolyte had raped her. In revenge, Theseus asked his father Poseidon to punish Hippolyte. The sea god resurrected the Minotaur, who had been killed by Theseus, as a water monster. Riding along the sea, Hippolyte's horses were frightened by the monster and jostled Hippolyte from the carriage. He became tangled in the reins and was dragged to his death. I'll continue with the plot synopsis in a moment, but we'll be right back after this. The Opera Company of Philadelphia is proud to present its 2011-2012 Aurora series for chamber opera at the Perelman Theater, which embraces a spirit of innovation and creativity. In March, the Opera Company presents its fourth Curtis Opera Theater production in association with Kimmel Center Presents, Hans Werner Henze's Elegy for Young Lovers. Set in the Austrian Alps, Elegy follows a ruthless poet who manipulates the people surrounding him to create inspiration for his art, despite the deadly consequences. In June 2012, the Opera Company presents Dark Sisters by composer Nico Muhly and librettist Stephen Karam. The opera follows one woman's dangerous attempt to escape her life as a member of the Fundamentalist Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, a sect that split from mainstream Mormonism in the early 20th century. Get your tickets to this must-see operatic event. Come and see some of the most innovative opera in one of the most intimate settings, the Perelman Theater. Order your 2011-2012 subscription online. Opera at the Academy, which includes Bizet's Carmen, Mozart's Abduction from the Seraglio, and Puccini's Manon Lescaut, and the Aurora series for chamber opera at the Perelman, with Elegy for Young Lovers and Dark Sisters. Subscriptions are available online at operaphila.org or by calling 215-732-8400. Phaedra is a collaboration by Hans Werner Henze and the poet Christian Lennart. A priest by profession, Lennart had very little to do with the world of music. Henze discovered the man's poetry in a newspaper and decided to ask the young man to be his librettist. Lennart expressed doubt as to whether he was the right person, but Henze insisted. Scored for a mezzo-soprano, it was a mezzo who inspired Henze to write an opera on this subject. When considering Phaedra, Henze originally found her, quote, quite nice, but then it turned out that she was a pretty rotten specimen, base, malicious, intriguing, heedless, and lacking respect. The orchestral scoring is small, only 23 instrumental soloists, 4 are strings, violin, viola, cello, and double bass, but on the other hand, 2 percussionists play a total of 28 different instruments. There's also a piano, a celesta, and 2 Wagner tubas, which are part of a group of 15 wind instruments. The first act of the opera takes its very firm foundation from ancient Greek mythology and is set in Greece, and it ends where most of the myth's retellings do, with the death of Phaedra. After finishing the first act in autumn 2005, Henze lost his physical strength. He said, quote, I stopped talking and slept all the time. In October, he collapsed and was taken to the hospital in Rome. Then his partner Fausto Moroni and his assistant Michael Kirsten looked after him at home for 6 weeks. Things looked bad. Henze said the coffin was already ordered, the death notices printed. But then he pulled through after all, and in the beginning of 2006 he began working on the second act, rather aptly the scene where the shattered Hippolyte is reanimated on Lake Nemi. The second act takes up the story as told by Ovid, with Hippolyte being brought back to life by Artemis. But as this new person named Virbius, he's only able to experience life in a fragmented way. It is set in Nemi near Henze's home, And Henze has said that in Act Two, the Minotaur, quote, proclaims a kind of freedom. The spring comes into the world and the woods. And the opera walks a metaphysical tightrope between this world and the next, effortlessly invoking a porous divide between the living and the dead. The opera's end is both transcendental and inconclusive. We are all born naked, we press towards mortality, and dance. Phaedra is a concert opera in two acts by Hans Werner Henze. Its first performance was given at the Berlin State Opera on September 6, 2007. The opera, as I mentioned, has only five characters: Phaedra, wife of Theseus, mezzo-soprano; Hippolyte, son of Theseus and Phaedra's stepson, tenor; Aphrodite, goddess of love, beauty, and sexuality, soprano; Artemis, goddess of the hunt, wild animals, wilderness, childbirth, virginity, and the moon, countertenor; and the Minotaur, the half-man, half-beast, half-brother of Phaedra, who was killed by Phaedra's husband and Hippolyte's father, Theseus. And the Minotaur is a bass. Act 1, as we said, is set completely in antiquity, and Act 2 in more contemporary times. Each scene of each act has a subtitle, if you will. Act 1, we are in the morning, and Scene 1 is set in the labyrinth. The music begins almost as if churning in primordial filth. We're in the ruins of the labyrinth. Aphrodite, Phaedra, Artemis, and Hippolyte comment like a Greek chorus on that which has happened. Theseus, the Athenian king, has killed the Minotaur in the labyrinth, and the echoes of that act resound to create the new story of Phaedra and Hippolyte. In Scene 2, the edge of the forest, we get to know Hippolyte and Phaedra a little bit. Hippolyte is hunting, and we learn that his entire being is uncorrupted and chaste. He worships the goddess Artemis, and his stepmother wanders at dawn. Her young stepson reminds her of her husband Theseus. Through the influence of the goddess Aphrodite, she falls in love with Hippolyte. Full of shame and self-loathing, she considers taking her life by bringing a shard of glass to her wrists. Aphrodite, who is also in love with Hippolyte, stops Phaedra from taking her own life. Aphrodite is jealous of the goddess Artemis, whom Hippolyte worships, and vows revenge. Scene 3, Thicket. As they wander through the thicket, Phaedra and Aphrodite discover Hippolyte sleeping. When he wakes, Phaedra presents herself and sings of her love to him. Artemis steps out of the woods to warn Hippolyte, and he is disgusted by his stepmother's advances and brutally pushes her away. After all, he only has eyes for Artemis. Phaedra's love quickly turns to hate, and she and Aphrodite unite in their rage. Phaedra grabs Hippolyte's knife and again tries to slit her wrists, but Aphrodite is able to stop her once more. Scene 4, the snare. In retaliation for her rejection, Phaedra writes a letter to her husband Theseus, saying that his son Hippolyte has raped her. Scene 5, the death of Hippolyte. Artemis enters and reports that Theseus believed Phaedra's letter and has sought revenge against Hippolyte for this offense. Determined to kill his son, Theseus asked his father, the sea god Poseidon, for help. As Hippolyte drove along the coast in his chariot, Poseidon resurrected the Minotaur from the sea as a water monster. Hippolyte's horses were frightened by the monster and threw him from the carriage, dragging him over the rocky terrain. As Artemis sings, the fatally wounded Hippolyte stumbles towards her. Then, with the sound of a trap door, Phaedra hangs herself as we see the Minotaur dancing in the background. Act 2, Evening. Scene 1, Do You Remember Who You Were? In a grotesquely comic scene, Artemis brings Hippolyte's body to a grove in Nemi. She brings him back to life, virtually piecing him together to look a bit like Frankenstein. She has rebuilt him as her plaything and locks him in a cage, giving him the new name Virbius, meaning man twice. Phaedra rises from the underworld as a bird and mocks Hippolyte. Scene 2, When Do the Dead Approach You, Hippolyte? As a storm brews, Aphrodite appears and claims Hippolyte for the underworld. Phaedra and Aphrodite try to lure Hippolyte, but Artemis catches him in a net and hides him in a cave. Scene 3, In the Mirror.
Hippolyte crouches by a pool in the cave, looking at his reflection, and does not know who he is. He dreams of a faraway garden. Phaedra tries once more to lure him into the underworld. Frightened, Hippolyte pushes Phaedra away and runs from the cave as an earthquake strikes. Scene 4. Hippolyte is resurrected as the king of the forest. He wanders through the grove in Nemi. The past and the future are blurred in a dance. What has happened and what will happen come together.
This production of Phaedra is by Robert B. Driver and designer Philippe Amand, who worked together on the Opera Company's acclaimed production of Orphée et Eurydice last June. OCP's Jack Mulroney, music director, Maestro Corrado Rivaris, conducts. In the cast, we have William Burton, who has a long history with the Opera Company of Philadelphia. He made his debut with us in 1997 as Tom Rakewell in The Rake's Progress and has sung such roles as Belmonte, Tamino, Nemorino, Alfredo, Ferrando, Nadir in The Pearl Fishers, Faust, Eisenstein in Fledermaus, and the male chorus in The Rape of Lucretia.
Also joining Bill, we have Tamara Mumford, the mezzo-soprano who wowed Philadelphia audiences a few seasons ago in the title role of Benjamin Britten's The Rape of Lucretia at the Perlman Theater. Joining Tamara and Bill will be Anthony Roth Costanza, countertenor. Great to have a countertenor back on Philadelphia stages with the Opera Company. And then we have two local up-and-coming singers rounding out the cast. We have Elizabeth Ryder, who again wowed audiences last year as Amour in Gluck's Orphée et Eurydice. She was the one with the pink mohawk. And she's also back next season to sing Blondchen in Mozart's The Abduction from the Seraglio. And then we have bass Jeremy Milner, who is an AVA graduate and has sung in a couple of Opera Company Philadelphia productions, including L'Enfant et les Sortilèges, Gianni Schicchi, Otello, just to name a few.
To learn more about Henze and Phaedra, join us for A Taste of Opera, a free preview of the opera on May 22nd from 2 to 3 p.m. Reservations are required for A Taste of Opera, and they can be made by emailing your name, address, and number in your party to outreach@operaphila.org.
And don't forget about the free pre-performance lectures, Opera Overtures. They're held 1 hour before every opera that we do at the Perlman Theater. For information on all of these events, you can log on to our website at www.operaphila.org/community. Now, tickets for Phaedra are on sale now and can be purchased by calling 215-893-1018. That's 215-893-1018 or online at www.operaphila.org. This wraps up our podcast for Phaedra. Special thanks to Dr. Jeremy Gill, OCP's Executive Director David Devan, Rebecca Whitlow, and of course to co-host Maren Montalbano.
And don't forget to download and listen to our other podcasts on this season's operas. If you have any questions or comments, please send them via email to outreach@operaphila.org. That's outreach@operaphila.org. Thank you again for joining us. I'm Maren Montalbano.
And I'm Mike Bolton. In Tune with the Opera Company of Philadelphia is produced, edited, and engineered by yours truly. Thanks again, and I hope to see you at the opera.